Hello, everyone. Before we get to today's podcast, I needed to give you a quick update because this show was recorded some time ago. And when I mean some time ago, I'm thinking it was recorded probably before Christmas or New Year's or something. And since then, we've had the Super Bowl, we've had Matt Rainey and the WWMD, and we did not have the big announcement about the IT Owners Compass meeting that we're going to be having this fall in Chicago. So I wanted to make sure that I got that announcement in here with the show. So the ITO Compass meeting, IT Owners Compass, if you go to itocompass.com, you'll get the correct name. You know what? I'm not even going to edit this. I'm just going to keep on going. So August 24th to 26th in Chicago, Illinois, is the IT Owners Compass meeting. Folks, I need to let you know, tickets are selling fast. We are probably already past the number of attendees that we had at last year's meeting in Washington, D.C. I have no idea how many seats we have left, but there is a limited number of seats. So if you've been to the ITO Compass website, you'll see that we do have the forming of a schedule. Don't worry about the fact that there aren't any topics or session names in there. Trust me, there are going to be some great sessions. We're going to have some great speakers. You have already seen that we have Michael Michalowicz in attendance as a keynote speaker. For those that don't know him, he is the author of the books Profit First and The Pumpkin Plan. There's also going to be a boat ride that's included in the event where you can get an autographed copy of Mike's book. You'll be able to visit with sponsors, enjoy the Chicago skyline, a lot of things happening at this event. So trust me, don't wait for the schedule. Plan on going. It is going to be fantastic. The workshops are going to be better. They're going to be, well, I was going to say stronger and faster, but this is not a Steve Austin commercial, but it is going to be great. The venue is at the Kinsey Hotel, one of Chicago's premier hotels, which also houses the WeWork space where we will actually be having the conference at. Everything's in one building, folks. It's going to be great. I also need to let you know, this show is being published very early in the morning on February 22nd, which is a Thursday. And if I'm not mistaken, next Wednesday, February 28th, if you have not only paid your ticket, but you have prepaid your hotel room, you will be entered to win one free night while you attend the conference. There are some other raffles going on, but I think the raffle for the free room is going to happen live in the Facebook group. And if you've signed up for the conference, you've got an admission into the Facebook group, and you'll be able to watch the drawing live to see if you get yourself a free night. Ladies and gentlemen, I just wanted to get that stuff in there. And now let's get on with the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. And yes, I am coming at you again from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, the previous home of spring break. And once the winter is gone, we'll have it again at some point. So I am bringing you a nice little show tonight. I've got a buddy of mine that we're going to share some stories. So we're going to go a little bit old school again and just talk about some tales from the trenches. We have a jam and jelly pack show for you tonight. But before I get to my guest, let me do a little bit of housekeeping. And as you know, we have a sponsor for the show.
Are you moving your business to Office 365? Working in the cloud can make your life a lot easier, but getting help? Well, that's a different story. And that's why you should call AppRiver. They've got the most experienced support team in the business. You'll get free U.S.-based support from folks who care about helping you and actually know how. If you're going with Office 365, go with AppRiver. Try AppRiver services free for 30 days. Visit appriver.com/podnutspro. That's appriver.com/podnutspro.
So without getting into too many rabbit holes and delays, let me introduce to you my good buddy, Stan. Stan, I'm going to let you introduce yourself because I don't think that I can do you justice. So bring it on, baby.
Thanks for that, man. Thanks for that. Hey, guys, Stanley Lewis, principal and founder of Fluid Designs. We're MSP located up in Union, New Jersey here. We specialize in dealing with for small companies, small to medium-sized companies, everywhere from that one solo person up to about 75 comfortably. We specialize in vertical. Just like Marv here, solo shop here, and keeping everybody up and running and making them all happy. So we got plenty of stories for you, and I look forward to being part of this podcast today, and I appreciate you having me on today.
All right. So, Stan, tell everybody how long you've been in business.
Okay, I've been in business officially on paper since 2001. I've been doing this stuff a couple years before that. So I pretty much have that story where I got a computer and never left. So technology is all I know. I don't know anything else. I always wonder if I missed something in life, but I don't think so. This path has found me. It's been a great journey.
So let me guess. Your first computer would have been something like a Compaq 386. 486.
No, even further, man. Oh. Compaq Pesario, man. 3000, I think it was. 3000. I remember exactly what happened, too. We went to Sears. We had three different models, right? The low end, the middle, the high, and we picked the one in the middle.
You know? So you probably paid what,
$1,500? Yeah, it was more like $2,500. It wasn't. By the way, it wasn't me. It was my mom, right?
Right.
I think that payment happened in installment.
That's right. Mom, I need this. I need this. I'll get that A in school.
Well, you actually hit the nail on the head. And that's actually what happened. The bet was I will, make the honor roll, which, by the way, the geek that I was, I did anyway. And hey, I knew all about that income tax check, right? So I said, when that income tax return comes, I want a computer. And she placed the sucker's bet. She knew I'd win. And the income tax check came and I got a computer. So everybody held up their end of the bargain.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. All right. So Stan, I'll tell everybody the reason that I wanted to have you on is that you and I for the last month and a half have been sharing stories back and forth that all seem to revolve around customer etiquette of some sort or fashion. So I figured, hey, why keep the joy to ourselves? We'll share our stories with my listeners here. And before I get started with the one story I was going to bring up, I'm going to ask you, you had a story that you said finally came to resolution today?
Yes. So, this story is, it's multifaceted in one regard. And I got no problem sharing it. I love giving more backstory than necessary. So I'm going to do that okay. Here today. So we pretty much had a client that was break fix. That relationship happened for probably about 2 months, 2 to 3 months in that fashion. And then, of course, we let them know, we can control some of your costs. Let's go under a managed option. And they did. With that, of course, comes, our suggestion for new equipment, new hardware, or as things happen. So the first thing that needed to happen is, they had all these laptops that had pretty much, 1 year warranties, somebody bought the cheapest ones off of Amazon. So we proposed new laptops because they were having issues with them. And then one of the things that we do when we send quotes is we don't really break down everything specifically line by line and pricing and things like that. We pretty much do what contractors do, right? And I actually learned this from contractor clients. We put everything down, we give you a total price at the end, includes installation and the whole nine yards. You choose to go with it or not. So when that situation happened, this particular client ended up saying, hey, what are the exact specs on this laptop? What's the exact model line? And then the next thing that happened is we ended up getting an email link with you know, a machine on Amazon, right? And it was like, is this the computer that you guys are quoting? And, you know, of course it wasn't. And number two, we just shook our heads, which was, listen, you know, we're your guys. You trust us. You've signed the contract. You've committed, and we've committed to you. We're not going to have this back and forth on what is it, which model, can I go get it cheaper somewhere else? You know, we just can't have that. So what ended up happening in that particular situation is they allowed us to, you know, move forward with buying the units. Not a problem. Fast forward, you know, it's now been a month and a half, 2 months after that original incident. They're expanding their office space, right? Nothing bad. And they asked us, you know, we went out there, evaluate the new office space. They're, you know, they're literally just getting an office across the hall from them and, you know, what the networking requirements are. Now, the one thing is, and we can all relate to this is, number one, these guys already kind of got the office, right? You know, they did that stuff without talking to us ahead of time, of course. Right? Oh, and of course, it needs to be done yesterday, right?
Yeah, we gotta move in tomorrow. Can you be here to move our stuff?
Correct. So that's the first thing, which was like, uh-oh, guys, like, if you guys were talking about this or trying to figure out what to do, you should have definitely reached out to us ahead of time, right? And the request we got was, well, just put wireless. Well, that's a great request, except that all the phones are IP-based phones, right? So just putting wireless next door doesn't help. Because you need to plug in your phones into the network, right? Yep. If you only had your laptops and wireless, you know, desktops, right, with wireless cards in them, that would be fine. But that's not the situation at hand, right? You're going to put a copier over there. So it has to be wired. So I said, okay. Luckily for them, the space is already wired. All we have to do is connect the existing space to the new space, right? And like I said, we're running through the hallways and stuff. But the most interesting part was we sent the quote, right? We proposed some new access points, you know, a network switch, a rack to put everything in, you know, everything that's needed in that new space. Once again, we get the email back. Which model access points are you guys picking? Which model switch are you picking? The rack, is it open? Is it closed? You know, is it a wall mount? Is it a, you know, and once again, so the email back was, you know, to the office manager was, listen, we can't go through this exercise every single time that we're picking something. We just can't. Like, we can't. Just so you know, you're free to buy from whoever you want. But just so you know, under our agreement, anything that somebody else puts in or installs is not covered by us, right? So anything that you have or there's an issue, it's always going to be time, right? You're always going to pay above and beyond your contract pricing. So just be prepared for that. But you're free to shop. You're free to buy from wherever you want. And I said, I told the office manager, look, and if any of the partners have an issue with this, guess what, man? They give us a call, right? I have no problem talking. I have no problem being transparent. And of course that happened, right? Partner, I don't understand what the big deal is. You know, it's just, we're just asking questions. And of course these are attorneys. So, you know, which in some way, shape or form, everything is negotiable, right? So the most important part that I, position that I took was, and we all do it in this field, and I don't know why, I don't know when the trend started, which is we essentially consult for free from them.
Yep.
And more of it, I personally believe like that's something that we shouldn't do, right? So, but it's become industry standard, right? If you call the plumber to your house, you call the electrician to your house, you take your car to a mechanic, there's a diagnostic fee, right? There's some kind, you go to the dentist, right? There's some kind of consultation fee to that initial meeting that happens in determining what you need to have done, right?
Absolutely.
But as an industry, for some reason, we just don't do that, right? I don't know if it's because we think we're going to make money on the hardware, on the software, on the service, right? Or we try to bundle some of it into that, some of that cost, upfront cost. But we just, it's not something that's stated upfront. So what I let them know is I say, listen, I'll give you whatever you need. I'll give you every SKU number, every part number. I'll tell you down to the dime. I'll send you the link right to the manufacturer website. You just got to pay me $350. What do you mean? Yeah, consultation. Right. So you're going to pay me. I'm going to then consult. Right. We're going to morph me from just some guy quoting you to a consultant because I took time to engineer everything that you have. Right. I went to your space. I didn't charge you for that trip. I went to see everything you have. I documented. I said, OK, this is what we have. This is what we need. I architected everything. Right. I put it all together. And I don't care what anybody says. I don't care how long you've been doing this. Every situation is unique and it's just not cookie cutter. And you got to make sure that what you're putting together is obviously right for that particular client, right? And for the space and the needs. So So I said, no, that's the fee. Guess what? If you decide to use me, I'm going to take that money and I'm going to credit it to the invoice that we're against the invoice. If not, guess what? I got paid to consult. You did what you had to do to go save money and everyone's happy. And the conversation just was like, but why? I don't understand. Why do we have to pay that? I said, guess what? If you use me, you get it back. So it's not like, you know, you're not going to lose. And if I'm your guy, then we have no problem. And it was just, you know, she tried to get it out of me. She didn't, because at the end of the day, this is all we have to sell, right? I mean, my time is valuable. Your time is valuable. Everyone else in this business, right? So, you know, I would appreciate, you know, we can have another model where we tell people we charge them up front for this kind of stuff. I think that there's enough people that are not doing that, that it's going to hinder you. But I think going into this model of, if somebody asks you for something, then hit them with the, this is the fee for it. And then, you know, see where you go from there.
Right, right. So there is this whole underground industry type of thing happening in the tech world that we, for some reason, cannot duplicate. You know, you mentioned the plumber, the AC guys, anybody that comes out to your house to do something. Normally, if you're going to price shop, you do that on the phone. Hey, how much would it cost for you to come out and fix my toilet? That's $150 an hour. All right, let me call the next guy. That's $125 an hour. You call the third guy. Well, it's $100 to show up, and then if we do work, blah, blah, blah. So as techs, a lot of us don't do that. And so that's one thing that hurts us. The other is there's no real regulation in the tech world, you know, and there's no real regulation in a lot of those areas, but a lot of them have some sort of certification, some sort of state certification, you know, some license that, you know, they can have ripped for them. So that's one thing. They also have industry meetings where they all discuss, here's the standard at which we do things. And they all discuss the rates and all of that stuff. And
they got the books. They got the books, right?
Yes.
I mean, I actually do work for Electricians Plumbers. They literally have a book.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you a personal story on a plumber. Literally, the garbage disposal stopped working, right? Yeah. So I'm like, all right, it's leaking, right? We got to get this handled. I call the guy and say what we said, $59 just to show up, tell you what's wrong, right? Guy came. $59. This is what's wrong. You need a new disposal. I said, what are my options? Number one, we put a new one in for you, $650, right? Number two, I said, hey, how about if we just repipe it, right? Forget the disposal, right? We just repipe it, $650, right? Now, I got a client who's out of state that does this kind of work too. So I said, hey, how much should a new disposal cost? I didn't tell them how much this guy was charging. And she wrote back, between $600 and $700. So it's what you're saying. There's an understanding in the industry. Now, what ended up happening? I went to Home Depot. I bought the thing for $90. I came home, had a beer in my hand, and I did it under an hour and I was done, right? If it didn't work out that way, I would have called the guy back and he would have came and did it, right? But yeah. I was willing to take that shot. But the whole thing is, at the end of the day, yes, there is definitely a cohesiveness amongst the industry.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
And everyone kind of adheres to it. And like I said, they literally say book pricing. And I know a lot of HVAC guys, they don't do the by the hour. They cut that by the hour stuff out and everything is project work, fixed price based on
that's right. Flat rate. And the only place you actually still see hourly rates is where your auto mechanics, where they have it all displayed on the wall. Here's the hourly rate. But if you need to have your car fixed because you were in an accident and the insurance, you know, whether the insurance is going to pay or the body shop is going to do it, you know, without insurance. You know, I don't know if you've, you know, worked with body shops. That was one of my big industries when I first started. They all have the same software.
Correct.
And there's only so many insurance companies. So in a lot of cases, when they're in the computer putting in parts and labor, not only does it tell you, here's the part, and these are the only manufacturers that will make this part for this car, for this year, for this model. Here's the price, and here's how long your tech should take to put it in at this rate.
Yep.
And then the insurance company will come in and say, well, this is how much we'll pay.
Yep.
So, you know, so if you go body shop to body shop, you know, at least nowadays, not, you know, about 15 years ago, you could get away with, well, we'll save you the deductible. Or if you pay us cash, we'll do aftermarket. Not today. Today, it's pretty much standard. Any body shop using the same insurance company, they're pretty much standard across the board. We are still not like that. So I wanted to go back because your story had
I didn't hit you with the ending of
it. Oh, tell us the ending.
So that was yesterday, right? All that conversation was yesterday. And today I get the email saying, move forward with the project.
Oh, lucky man.
That's it. You know, just move forward with the project. Just let's go. We're going to do it. You know, let's move.
Because here's the thing. They probably got to the point where they realized, you know what? It's less hassle if we just do it, do what he says, as opposed to starting over, trying to get somebody else to come in, give them pricing. Hey, is this the right thing to do? Is this what we need? You know, and that's where a lot of us do have to stand our grounds and say, look, this is what it is. This is what I do. Are you going to find somebody out there to do it cheaper? Yes. Are you going to find cheaper parts? Yes. But are they going to be what's right for you and your business? Probably not. That's why you have me.
Well, and the big sale, I mean, and I think you can fully understand. And I told them this. I said, hey, guys, nothing that I've proposed or sold to you has not performed as advertised, right? Because what does it look like if I put something in your office and install a piece of hardware or software and it doesn't do what I said it was going to do, right? That's not a good look for me, right? It's going to be nothing but headaches. You guys will be calling me like, you sold me this thing. And by the way, that leads me to something else, just aside. We don't sell anything, any machines, workstations, laptops, computers, servers, right? Nothing that has less than a 3-year warranty, right? So there are some things that I don't do because I know it's just going to come back to bite me later on, right? So that's not even an option. You want to go buy something with a 1-year warranty, you go to Best Buy, you're on your own, right? Like I have nothing to do.
No,
but
that's an interesting little twist.
We don't do that at all because I know that if we do, it's just going to be my headache in a year and a day when this thing breaks or doesn't work as before.
I don't know many people that do that. So that is that's quite interesting. Now, I do know people that, let's go back to, you mentioned at the very beginning that you provided them with a quote like a contractor would. So somebody comes out, for instance, last year when I put a patio on the back of my house, we went out and got our estimates, or they came to us. But pretty much when they were done with the estimate, it was, here's what we're doing. And they may have listed, we're going to do this, you know, aluminum framing, we're going to do this, here's the price. It was one price, all three of them. And it wasn't like I could go to them, hey, can you tell me what type of aluminum you're using here? What kind of screen are you doing there? Now, there were some options because the wife wanted to do, I'll go ahead and say it. She won't listen to this. So she wanted to do pet screening on the patio so that the cats could go out, and then in case they climbed the screen. Mm-hmm. And so she wanted to get a price on a regular screen and then the pet screen. And the guy said, look, you don't want the pet screen because whatever reason, it was something about you wouldn't get enough light through, or it would be dark or something like that. But it wasn't like they had a list of, here's all the different screens you can get. Here's your light duty. Here's your heavy duty. They didn't give us, you know, here are the type of bolts that we're using. So you can choose this. Now, in our industry, we're in a period of what I call DIY America. You know, people have already done it with their homes, you know, their property brothers, where they can, you know, come in and refurb a house and flip it and all of that stuff. Well, now they want to do it with computers, where they want to know every single thing about a computer, because you know why? I can go on Amazon and price it myself. You know, I can go down to whatever computer store and price it myself. And I've had a lawyer try to tell me that he will build his own server. And I said, okay, good luck, but don't call me.
That's right.
So the whole contractor thing, now I know that several people will actually do a modification of what you do. I modify it. I, for instance, I will put in, you know, I will say HP server. Uh-huh. And then I'll list, you know, 64 gigs of RAM, this type of processor, this much hard drive. I don't list the model numbers of any of it.
Correct.
And then I'll put the price, and then I'll put desktops, this model, and then a price. I may list enough specs just to give them an idea. Look, it's got plenty of memory. It's a quad-core processor. You've got a terabyte hard drive. It's got this much warranty, but here's the bottom line price. And so when they go to Amazon, or they go online, or they call HP or Dell, and they say, well, I want what matches his estimate, and they can never quite match it. And I tell them, look, they can't match it because they don't know what I'm doing to add value to your estimate. You know, it's not just a matter of, you know, this process or this memory. It's the time that I put in to build and test. You know, that other company is not going to do that for you. They're just going to build it and ship it. And if something's wrong
with
it,
it's on your own.
Yeah, it's on you. So all that stuff. So let me ask you a question on, this came up probably a couple of weeks ago, where somebody asked me, do you itemize your managed services costs?
No.
And I told them no myself, where I put at the top of the invoice, and actually mine says monthly service. I don't even call it managed services on the thing. It's monthly services. Now I have a group where I'll say how many servers, this price, how many desktops, this price, HIPAA documentation, this price, but it's all summarized. One price is all they see. Some techs think that they should put, here's how much it costs for servers. That's here. That what you were listening to the sirens?
Oh, no, 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 no.
So they'll put how much it costs per server and how much it costs per desktop. So that's another thing that's starting to become an issue for me and for other techs, is other techs that will list those as line items, so that a customer will then come back to me and say, well, you know, this person's charging me, you know, $150 per server. You're charging me $175. Can you match his price?
So the whole price game, right? I've never considered myself the cheapest guy, and I never consider myself the most expensive, right? I remember at some point in my career here, I was doing some sub work for some. I'm going to just going to hold it on price. But when I went there, these guys told me that this company that I was doing sub work charges a minimum of 4 hours at $250 an hour for any on-site. That could be going and replacing a keyboard, right? $1,000 bill for rolling out. So what did that say? Anything. Anytime we leave, 4 hour minimum, and our hourly rate is $250. So I personally got out of the whole price fighting game a long time ago. And I always say this, if that person is giving you such a great deal, why are you still talking to them?
Yep, there you go.
Right? Why are you talking to them? Because if our relationship right now at, you know, when we're forming it and trying to build it, is going to be hindered solely on price, I already know that this is not going to be a good fit, because like we've talked about in the past, you and I, it's just going to keep happening back and it's just never going to stop, right? It's always going to come up, right? You're going to tell me it's something else, but we all know that price is actually the question. So for me, and by the way, if you listen to any of the industry pundits, right, any of the big speakers that go out, you're never supposed to break down price, right? You're never, everything is supposed to be bundled. Yeah. Because you can't, you're supposed to make the client stick. You are not supposed to itemize everything to then have them. Because guess what? That same guy who itemized and then they had a, you know, exchange, you know, Office 365 for $7 for a mailbox. And they go, hey, I want a Microsoft website. It's $4.95. Why are you charging me $7? They're going to be in this race, as some people that I know call it, the race to the bottom forever, right? Yeah. Because you did that. No, what you do is you figure out your costs, you come up with what your markup to be, you group that, all right? You group it as a bundled price, and that's what you show the client. Now, in my agreements, okay, for my managed client, it specifies that there is no per user price, there is no per server price, there is no per computer cost. We come up with a price based on many variables in your particular environment. And at any given time, if things change in your environment, that price will change. If you add users, if you add equipment, I might come out to you and say, hey, look, this is your new price based on those changes. Now, of course, you know, and I know, we have our back-end formulas, right? But we never let the client know what that formula is.
So here's the only question I'm going to ask you. For the people that do the bundling and don't show the price per device, per user, how often would you go to a customer and raise or lower their rate based on the add moves or changes? For instance, is it if a customer adds one new workstation or is it five new workstations?
Instantaneously. If I, mind you, we're the one that added the workstation, we took it away, right? Or it, you know, for me, my stuff is really more based on user count than any of the hardware stuff, to be honest with you. So, but my thing is, once that happens, you adjust your numbers right away, right? I mean, you should open up a ticket in your RMM, and you say, this is what we did. We added a user to, you know, 365. We added a user to, you know, a new employee, whatever it is, raise my rate, prorated as of today to the end of the month. And then next month they get a new bill, right? I mean, there is no delay. You shouldn't be missing that money.
Right.
And of course, if you got to give some of it back, right, in terms of reduction, you do that as well. Just so you know, in my agreements, there is a nice line in there that says what the minimum price of the agreement could be. So I don't care if you go down to one person, right? There's a minimum based on each client's, based on size. The minimum, the agreement will not be lower than this particular.
That's a good way to start. That's usually how I filter out prospects, where when they say, well, how much would it cost to you know, to support us? And basically, well, it's probably going to be a minimum of $1,000. I only have two people. Then you either pay the $1,000 or you, you know, need to find somebody that fits your needs a little bit better. So correct. That's a way to do it. I do that. And I also do what you do, where any changes in the environment, the next month will reflect the change in the price. I don't let them know what the price is. I've had customers that have tried to guess, you know, well, we added a computer and you went up $100. So it's $100 per computer. I said, no, not really. That just happens to be the formula for this given month. So for some of my customers, I mean, it actually fluctuates a lot. For my larger law firm customers, I mean, you know, they could have three different rates in three different months because they'll, you know, add users and add computers. Now, your monthly, here's a good question. We're going off book now. Is it an all-you-can-eat or any sort of flavor of all-you-can-eat in terms of, do you provide unlimited remote service? Do you include on-site hours as part of that? How do you break down your bundle?
Okay, so obviously we give people more than one option, but the most popular option is the all-you-can-eat remote only, okay? Any on-site results in a charge, right? They get 15% off of our standard rates. And as I was telling you before, what we do is in the contract, because this is going to lead to something else, right? In the contract, in terms of what are your rates and do you raise your rates and things of that nature, in the contract, there's a link to where our rate section is, okay? And whatever those rates are, as a managed customer, you get 15% off of those rates, right? Off of the on-site time, off of the emergency support. So yeah, and by the way, it is limited to 9 to 5 or 9 to 6, right? Friday, excluding published holidays. So it's not like all you can eat 24/7, calling us at midnight. And no, we do have some boundaries. So yeah, so it is that. That's pretty much where most people fall in. Any projects are extra, right? Anything new, right? Anything new is extra. And of course, can increase your pricing, right? So, but for the most part, that's pretty much what.
All right. Sounds pretty much like what I do. So here's the question I'm going to ask. In terms of customer etiquette, is it better to fire a customer or is it better to just simply lose the customer? Now, do you need me to explain what I mean by that?
No, I know what you mean. And we've had this conversation. Me personally, I would rather lose a customer. And I'm going to tell you what. I know you and I have different schools of thought on this. First off, whether you like me or not, I like you or not, you're under contract, right? Until your contract is up. So I do, you know, my contracts range from anywhere from 1 year to 2 years. So that is in effect. If you decide you don't like me 6 months in or, you know, whatever, as long as we didn't fail to meet our obligation, you will have to pay to come out of that agreement, right? Of course, what do most people do? They're going to ride it to the end. Honestly, I can tell you in all the years of doing this, or you can say either I don't have enough agreements in place, I've only lost two clients that were under agreement and decided not to continue, right? And one of them was just because the business shut down, right? So there's nothing to do there. And the other one, you know, one of these people who just feel like he's never, you know, someone's always out, right? So, but me personally, back to the original question, is I feel that it is best to be fired, you know, or let go, or however you want to put it, because I want to get as much money as I can at the end of the day. I'm in business, all right? I know it's hard. It's not easy, right? It's not easy to get new clients, but I'm never going to let you go. You're going to let me go. Now, mind you, that's not to say that I haven't been put into situations where I told a client, go shop. Go see what's out there, man. You know, And you'll realize that we're not screwing you over or we're not trying to take advantage. So I've always been willing to walk away, but I've never said, don't ever call us again. We're done.
So as you know, I fired a customer, and normally I would be of the same agreement as you. I would rather just simply lose the customer, which I've done in the past. I have had customers that have gone away for whatever reason, and I've always made it to be their choice. And in particular, I've had one customer who who left. I don't know if you've heard this story. I don't know if I told you, but I had a law firm where it was two partners, but two businesses in the same space. So my client had the larger network, and the other client was physically connected to their network, but they weren't on the server. They weren't connected to, you know, the printers or the networking or anything. It was basically for them to have internet access, and they had their own tech. And the two partners were kind of like, well, why do we have to have two guys showing up? Why can't we just have one? And of course, it came down to, so Marv, the other guy charges us a lot less. And I said, well, because he has a lot less to do. You have a server, and I think at the time they had 10 people. I said, he's only got three workstations to worry about. So yeah, he's going to charge less. And they're like, no, he charges less per hour. And I had to say, well, he still has to do less per hour because he's just working on workstations. I'm doing your whole network. I'm doing a mail server. I listed all these things that I was doing for them. And when it came time to upgrade, we got into a discussion because they had the other guy try to match what I was doing. And I'm an HP shop, so I had quoted them HP server, HP desktops, same way I normally do it. Here's your summary. Here's your bottom line price. Here's a lump sum for my installation. And then this guy comes in and goes, well, I can get this off eBay, and found a shop that was giving them HP servers and desktops. And I said, you can get those. I will charge you double to install them because I have no idea what condition they are. And he goes, well, they're all new. This is a reputable company. I said, I hear you, but I don't know that. I cannot vouch for them. I cannot guarantee the hardware. If there's an issue, you're going to have to take it up with them. So bottom line with that is they ended up buying the stuff from me, but literally the month after we did that installation, they decided to part ways. And I said, okay. So let's move forward about 6 months. No, I'm sorry. There was an incident at 6 months, but that's not the one I want to talk about. The one I want to talk about is 18 months later when they called to ask me if I was still doing their backups. And I said, no, you left me. So that meant all the services left you. Well, we got hit with the ransomware and we just realized we haven't had backups for the last 6 months. And I said, I am so sorry to hear that. So bottom line is they lost 6 months of customer documents, files that they had done for court, affidavits, tons of stuff, 6 months of mail. They lost, so much stuff. They stayed with that guy for another year, and then they called me, and the attorney was like, Marvy, I'm so sorry. I can't believe I let that happen. We were friends. I said, whoa. I said, we weren't friends. We were business associates. I was helping your business. You were paying me for my services. What happened between us had nothing to do with friendship. So bottom line is they're now back. They're now on one of my monthly agreements. And so that was the way I like losing customers. I didn't like what happened in between when they came back because they got hurt pretty bad. But it took them going through that to appreciate now what I do for them. And they now understand this is why you pay the higher price. Not only do you have somebody who knows what they're doing, but you have somebody who's checking your backups, monitoring your network, making sure that everything runs smoothly. And to be honest, the less you see of me, the better. Because if I got to come on site, something ain't right.
So you know what's interesting about that is I personally always said that my best clients are the ones that had someone else, right?
Yeah.
Because then they don't think that the service that they're receiving from me is standard across the industry, right? Listen, I know I'm not the only IT guy. You're not the only IT guy. I mean, we all know this, right? But at the end of the day, this is what I do. This is where my skill set lies. I can make things happen. and I guarantee everything that I do, right? It just, you know, I'm pretty pompous when it comes to it, right? It's been warranted. But the whole thing is, unless I've had so many people that had the bad IT person experience, and then we come in, we take over the account, and then they understand what's going on and they appreciate it, right? But I've always struggled with like people that started new businesses where they never had this expense. It's a new thing, right? They're trying to get the business off the ground. I come in, I show them pricing, I tell them what we need to do. Maybe they do a project, and then like ongoing, they're like, but why do we have to pay this? And they just don't understand because they haven't had the bad experience.
Right.
I hate for it to be like that, but I've learned that that's actually like that new person starting a business, right? Or that new business opening up with 20 offices in there. That's really not my target client for that reason, because they just don't understand what goes into it, what we're actually providing, right? And they just assume that whatever it is that we're going to provide, the next person, right? At half the price, right? So, you know, I always say, you know, when someone wants a lower price, my best line that I love to use is, what do you not want?
Right.
Right? Because that's what happened when those guys were dealing with you, right? Well, this guy charges less than you do per hour, right? Whatever. Maybe you charged 100, he charged 50, right? So the question is, what do you not want? Because there's something you're not going to get at half of the price or whatever the lower price is by going with that guy versus me. And maybe you don't know it on the face, but they found out.
So in that regard, they fall under the category of what I call the tire kickers. You know, they're going to price everything. You mentioned it earlier in your story is, you know, they're the ones that they want to know every single model number so they can go and check what the price is on the market. And IT is one of those areas where hardware has become commoditized to some degree, because everybody thinks that technology is going to get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. But we know that that's not true, right? When was the last time your cell phone price went down?
Wait, I got a good one for you. I'll make it even better. I quoted a guy on a server last quarter, okay? And he didn't pull the trigger on it. He goes, okay, I think we're ready to do that this month. Everything went up. Same exact equipment, not even a different part. Same equipment went up by about 5 or 6%.
That's actually pretty good, because a lot of times when I have to do that, I can't get that exact model number anymore.
Well, we're both HP guys, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's that new gen stuff that's going to be here for the next year or whatever, year. So, but okay. The whole point is pricing went up, whatever it is, like limited supply, however you want to look at it. I went down each SKU number. There were about 6-7 different SKU numbers,
right?
And pricing kind of went up across the board. So, which is interesting, because like you said, the thought is that pricing goes down, but no, it could be availability, right? Is that, you know, things are scarce. Right, especially now with everybody, I know with the memory chips now and the video cards, right? Because of the miners and, you know,
yeah,
all the crypto stuff, right? So availability is kind of shrinking on certain things too, which of course drives. So
yeah.
I actually think that technology takes this. I've always seen it where, yes, something is priced high when it first comes out, pricing drops at some point, and then things become scarce, right? And then they go back up again. It's like if you're looking for an old part for some old machine. It actually might cost you an arm and a leg just because it's
not
available.
And that's exactly because, you know, hey, look, there's one shop in Nevada that has your part and he is asking a premium. So that's the way that is. So now let's go back to, is it better to fire or lose a customer? And here's why the real reason I wanted to bring you in is because when I went through and fired my customer, I cannot believe how much heat I took. Now, let me preface this by saying this isn't one of my bottom feeder customers. This isn't somebody that's got, you know, 3-4 workstations and is calling me every day being annoying. This is a larger customer that is a huge percentage of my business that most people would figure out a way to just simply put up with it because the money is that good. I, on the other hand, look at it this way. There were too many things along the way that got to be so annoying, so stressful, and basically took so much money out of my pocket that I was tired and done with it. And I will find somebody who's willing to pay me what I'm worth and allow me to make profit on the hardware. So the reason that I actually ended up firing them, the feather on the mountain that made it crumble was I was giving them the quote for their network upgrade, and they wanted me to give them, just like you had earlier, the exact line item and SKU number of every part of the servers so they could take it to somebody else to get it at cost. But what they were really wanting to do was to get the cost from that person to come back to me and say, well, if you can match that, then we'll stay with you. And I said, no, I need to be able to make money somewhere in this project. And if I don't make it on the hardware, then I've got to bill you for all the time I spent designing the server, looking for your data center space, putting this project together, talking to the software vendor. And they're like, well, isn't that part of our monthly agreement? No, your monthly agreement takes care of the monitoring and maintenance of your existing stuff. This is all new. This is all a new charge. And I'm trying to make sure, let me see who's listening to the show. Somebody will get this, but hopefully it won't be the customer. He said to me, he goes, well, I don't mind you making a few shekels. I said, a few shekels? I got to eat. So that was the last straw. There had been many, many other times where that's what they wanted to do. And this is a customer I've had for a very long time that we're not just talking a couple hundred bucks. We're talking thousands of dollars per year that they wanted me to give them the line items of stuff so they could go find it cheaper and then come back to me and say, well, you know, if you can match this, then we'll stay with you. And I just got to the point where I said, you know what? No more.
Well, this is the thing for me, right? That story. Number one, you're in business for yourself, right? You know, a lot of people that work for people have what I call the golden handcuffs, right? We all know what that, right? Where, you know, money's being dangled in your face to make you do things you don't want to do.
Yeah.
And one of the advantages of being in business for yourself is that, guess what, man? Like you said, the same way you can fire me, I can fire you, right? So I understand that completely. And my thing is, of course, I know the story in its entirety. You know, we've talked about it. And at some point, a relationship has deteriorated to the point where it's just like, my sanity is worth more than anything that you guys are willing to pay.
Yeah.
And the minute that if you accepted what was happening in that situation, that would have been more hell for you to pay as time went on, as far as I'm concerned, right? Because they're like, look, we grinded them down here. Then guess what? We want to buy the computers at cost. We want to buy this at cost, right? It's just going to keep happening. Yep. It's just going to keep happening. And what's that phrase? The way you set your sales determines your course. I love negotiating. And I always say in negotiating, I don't say it. I'm sure I grabbed it from somewhere, which is the person who's willing to walk away always wins. You got to be willing to walk away. And you were willing to walk away and you did. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's so empowering because the reason you're getting heat from it is because there are people that you probably talked to or probably in that same situation you were, and they're not willing to walk away for whatever reason. Now, I will tell you this. If I've ever lost a client that was a big, look, I'll tell you right now, I had a client up here who had 7 offices. Okay. At the time, they were my biggest client.
Yeah.
And, you know, things kept happening, similar to what you were saying. You know, they did have an agreement. It was all break fix, but, you know, they were spending money, right? It was consistent work, right? It kept happening. And I was trying to get them under agreement. You know, that's kind of when we first started out in, you know, 2008, 2009, they didn't want to do it. And we just eventually hit that point where the relationship deteriorated so much where we just, you know, we parted ways. And the most interesting about it was, of course, was I bummed? Yeah, because it was at the time the largest client. But guess what? And I got somebody better who spent more money than that. Anytime that I had that I've lost somebody or someone, you know, we parted ways, the next person that I got was better than that last, you know? And people have to understand that when you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else.
Yep.
And like you said, you had that happen with these guys, right? You had missed opportunities, other opportunities, things you've turned down because you were handling them or dealing with them or whatever it was. And now you've, in essence, freed yourself up to the other opportunities that exist out here in the universe.
Absolutely. And you know what? Just waking up, not being stressed is reward enough sometimes. I mean, I could tell more stories about, you know, having to wake up every Sunday wondering whether their mail server was frozen overnight when it did the restart, because that was a problem, because their mail server was, it was up there in years, let's just say that, and probably about as old as the blue hairs down here in the retirement neighborhood next to where this customer was. So, my goodness gracious, I don't want to dwell on them too much. I've had a good month.
But the point is, I think everybody has had a client. Well, I'll tell you right now, I know they're not listening. You know, my current biggest client, I mean, you know, actually, you know what? I got a question for you.
Uh-huh.
And because I feel like this happens when we're in clients, right? We build relationships with people in the offices, right? The office managers, other staff, right? People who are not necessarily decision makers, yep. Right? And in that, something's happened. And you can either look at them as a good thing or a bad thing. And I want to hear your opinion on this. Have you ever had a situation where someone in an office was feeding you information, right? Like, oh, you know, they're not happy with you right now, or, you know, they complain when they get the bill, or, you know, things that, you know, in essence, really aren't going to do you any good. But they, but to this, to that person, they actually, they think that they're helping you out by kind of giving you, right? So yeah. Have you ever had any of those situations happen?
I've had it on both sides where people will say, oh, they didn't like when you did this. Or I've had people that said, you know, they won't thank you and they won't tell you how great a job you did. But, you know, just so that you know, it was noticed. I've had both sides. But yeah, there's always, you know, the power hungry staff that thinks that, you know, they can get in good with the IT person and that you'll return the favor. I've had staff, I don't know if this is going to be in the same vein, but I've had staff where when it comes time to let them go, and I've had clients where literally, you know, in the old days, I used to have to go to the office when it was time for somebody to be let go. So I could, you know, lock them out of the computer, make sure of all of that. And, you know, we'd usually walk through with a box and they would know, oh, somebody's getting fired.
The box of shame. You were the security guard?
I was the bouncer kicking him out. You know? But it was always like, man, I thought we were friends. Why didn't you let me know? I'm like, you don't sign my check.
Nah, man, I looked at the bottom right. Your name was not on that thing, right?
But, you know, go back to your question. Yeah, there's always those people that, now, sometimes it's just, you kind of have to figure out what the motivation of is of the person doing it. Because sometimes, yeah, they're your friend. They just want to let you know, you know. Then there's ones that they want to let you know so they can incite something, you know, to get you all riled up. And then they can be gossiping around the office going, well, I just knew he was going to react that way when, you know, the stuff like that. So there's, you know, the politics, the soap opera drama. And that's pretty much how I take it. It's all soap operas. And so my relationship to staff has always been one of, listen, I can either be your computer guy or I can be your friend. And because you're not paying the bill, I have to be your computer guy. So that's the way I do it with staff.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting because, like I said, for me, you know, I had, you know, this situation and bring it up. Oh, you know, they're complaining about what they pay. And I say, listen, the boss who's complaining about what they pay me, whenever I see him and I shake his hand and ask him how his day is, he's never bringing up any of those topics, right? And whether he is or not, that's, you know, that's up to him. So this information you're giving me, I can't do anything with it because at the end of the day, number one, I can't go tell this person, oh, by the way, I was talking to one of your staff and this is what they told me, right? Is there a problem? Is there something we can resolve? And then number two, guess what? They're on a contract to May 2019. So this is a waste of time talking about it anyway because they can't go nowhere unless they want to pay me out. So that's kind of my thing is, what do you do with this information, right? You're trying to give me this information. What do you want me to do with it?
Right.
How is it of value to me?
Right. The other thing I've always done with it where a lot of times, you know, back in when I first got started, I think one time I went to the owner when something came up and it wasn't specifically that somebody said that they were unhappy with me, but that they were complaining about, you know, the computers and they weren't this and they weren't that. And why don't we buy these? And I said, well, I'll ask, but I know what the answer is. But I went to the owner anyway, and the owner's like, what do you care what they say? It's my business. I will decide what I pay for computers because, you know, staff, you know, they always want the latest and the greatest. And if a computer's 2 years old, oh, this thing is so slow. My computer at home is faster. Why don't they get better internet?
Yeah, you know what? I actually have a good one with that. Actually, a good one a client said to me. He says, because we've all been there where you hear the staff referencing materials or computers or technology as if it's theirs, right? Uh-huh. And like, you know, they put their name on it. And he said, it's theirs when it works, but it's ours when it's broken.
Yes.
right? You know, when everything's working fine, it's mine. When it's broken, you know, your firm computer is broken. Right. So that was always an interesting one that, you know, people get so territorial.
So here's a situation that came up today for me. I've got a business where it's technically three businesses in one. It's a ridiculous way to describe it, but it's three businesses in one. But the checks are all signed by one person. And so for the most part, his decision is what I go by. The third part of the business is new. It basically was a guy who had his own business and folded into this business and thinks that he's still running his own business. So he calls me. So we've had run-ins before because his staff basically thinks that they can call me and demand stuff. And I always have to say, well, did, you know, Mr., you know, check signer say anything? Well, why would he have to do it? That's because he makes the decision. So everything I do, he has to approve. So either you ask him and he'll call me and let me know, or the answer is no. So basically the I don't even know what to call him. He's not like the owner of this third business. He's, I don't know how it's structured and I don't really ask. I don't really care. But he called me and he's like, so I have an issue. I need to install QuickBooks and it's asking for admin privileges. And I said, okay, so you need me to install it for you. No, I should be able to install it. I said, no. He's like, well, this is my division, so I should. I said, yeah, but Mr. Check Signer and I don't have that agreement. And so he just basically shut up and he said, okay, well, when can you do it? And so we went through that. So the question I was going to ask is, how many situations have you had where people like that in the business, you made the comment that they think it's their computer? They should be able to do this. They should be able to stream music. They should be able to install whatever they want. Customer etiquette, in my mind, is whatever the check signer says you can do with that computer is what you can do with that computer.
100%. I tell people all the time. Actually, I had a weird situation. A law firm, they were going on trial. And for some reason, listen, it's not like they don't have money. I have no idea why they made this decision. There's no firm lab, okay? And the attorneys had to take their personal laptops to try. We do have a remote application, Citrix style, right? So, you know, I installed it on their machines and they can access everything in the office.
Right.
So this attorney was just flipping out on, why do I have to use my personal machine? Why am I not using the work machine? Now, I agree with that 100%, right? You shouldn't be using your personal machine for a work-related matter. And the firm is billing out enough money per day on this case that you could buy 30 laptops, right? So not that you need 30, you only need two. So, and I said, your grievance, although I understand it, you're saying it to the wrong person. I am not your boss. I am not the one who made the decision. I'm not the one who suggested that you use your work laptop. So all you got to do is march down three doors, go to your boss and have that conversation with you. But you're having it with me. Who am I? I'm nobody. I don't even work here, right? Yeah. I'm an outside vendor, right?
I'm going to walk out that door and forget we had this conversation.
Correct, right? So, yeah, so those things are very interesting. And I tell people all the time, you got a question? Go talk to the boss. I ain't the boss. I only do what I'm told. I got one office that's actually funny. They all the employees are like conspiracy theorists. They think that their calls are being recorded. And they think that everyone's watching them and there's a bug at the desk, right? So I got a few of those, right? And it's like, I can actually tell you that those things are not being done because I would be the guy to implement them. But it's just like, they're just like, well, we know you can't tell us if it's being done or not, you know? So I'm just like, well, I'm glad you understand that even if it was being done, that I can't tell you. That's but just right. So you know, it's not being done, but they're not buying it.
Of course.
Know?
And they're always like, well, if you were watching me, would you tell me? They're like, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you always, yeah. Those are the ones you walk into and they've got the webcams with the paper taped over it.
Yes. So wait, I saw the best meme today. I hate to do this to the podcast, man, and bring up a meme, but it said, if you put your ear up against your keyboard, you can hear the NSA agent make the light couple every time you open up a new incognito browser.
Okay, wait. You got to go back because you were off to the side of your microphone. So I can't clean that up. So you got to say it again.
All right. So I saw this meme today that just cracked me up, and it said, "If you put your ear up against the keyboard, you can hear your NSA agent make a light chuckle every time you open a new incognito browser window." You're right. Everybody's scared, man. So everyone's watching us. We're, you know, everyone. Look, reality is, I mean, I do think overall, right? And I'm not limiting this to our businesses. I mean, look, man, we're used to being watched. I think we've adapted to that circumstance, right? Surveillance cameras. I mean, look, I'm 15 minutes from New York City, so you ain't got to tell me. Right? There's nothing that's not happening that's not being seen. I do remind people when it comes to work laptops, work computers, right? Anything in the office, it is not yours.
Yep.
The computer's not yours. Phone's not yours. So, and by the way, in Jersey, I don't know how it is in Florida, like in terms of like, let's say recording phone, it's a one party state. So as long as one person knows that calls are being recorded, you can record them.
Yep.
Some states have no parties where you can record a call and not tell anybody anything, right? You can be a third party to a call. So, and that actually leads me into, you know, and I'll just talk about a little bit, that leads me to the other side of my life, which is the forensics part. IP theft, right? Employees that are leaving and they're taking stuff before they leave. So there's all kinds of things around that. And I've seen, and it's like, oh, we never have to worry about that employee. They've been here for 20 years and, or they're VP of this, right? They're awesome. Yeah. Yeah. We don't lock that person down. You know, they're okay. And those are the people who are taking the stuff and leave.
Absolutely. You
know? So, it's interesting to see. From this standpoint, you know, I get to see the two guys, right? You know, when I'm wearing my IT hat and when I'm wearing my computer friends guy hat. And it's like, as the IT guy, right, you tell people, and I don't know if you ever do that. Hey, let's put this system in place. You know, let's journal all the emails incoming, outgoing. You say, let's put these things in place. So if an incident does arrive, you know, you're protected. And so many owners think it's not a big deal until it happens to them. All of a sudden, it's like, why didn't we have that? And it's like, well, we proposed it, but you said no. You know?
Yep. Well, we're dealing with it from the security standpoint and compliance. You know, the big thing right now, you know, for some reason, it just seems to have hit Florida recently that, you know, HIPAA standards need to be observed.
Oh, you mean those aren't optional?
So, yeah, guys are just now realizing, oh, we got to do HIPAA. So that's the one side. The other side is, oh, we can get refunds if we do HIPAA. So that's where they're like excited. They'll do it if they can get money back. But so the whole thing is I had one customer that just did a risk assessment and they kept asking questions during the risk assessment. You know, do you do this? And I had to be like, no, you don't. Why not? Because you didn't want to do that. What do you mean we didn't want to do that? Well, you didn't want to have employees log in every time they picked up the tablet. You know, it's like, oh, I guess we have to do that now. Yes, you do. And so the whole thing about customer etiquette now changes for them because they want to get that MIPS money back or whatever that thing is.
And, green.
And so I told them, I said, so here's what you got to do. Give me a copy of the risk assessment that they did so I can go through it and see all the things that you said you were doing that you didn't check with me to actually see if you were doing it. Yeah. So.
As long as you didn't sign off on it. Well, actually, you know what's interesting about that? I get clients come to us when they're renewing their security, their insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there's a lot of cyber stuff. Right.
Are you doing the cyber, the cyber risk insurance policies or whatever those things?
Well, yeah. I mean, some guys add it, some people don't. I mean, it's literally like $1,000 rider on your existing policy. Right. So, but depending on what business you're in, like I know, like up here, like, you know, the accountants and stuff, right? They're actually being asked these questions because they'll send me the form like, hey, what can we check off? And it's like, are our laptops encrypted? Are we changing? How often are we changing passwords, right? Things of that nature. And of course, I'm not lying. Like, if you guys want to fib and whatever, that's on you. But I'm not, you know, I put down exactly what it is. What they do with that after I hand it over, that's their business, right? So, but I'm using that, of course, as a way to have the conversations about the things like you just said that we need to do. I went to an account today, solo practitioner, right? Works out the house. And she was logging in. She had a problem with her tax program. She was logging in. And I said, she's like, oh, it's so annoying that I have to put in my username and password. I'm only one person here. And I said, listen, that's the IRS regulation. All the tax programs have complied, right? You got to log in. You got to change the password every 90 days. Can't be the same like any of the last four passwords or whatever it is. And I said, the software manufacturer is not going to make an exemption for you. I said, they do it. It's the same whether you have one person or a million people, right? It's the same thing across the board. And I don't understand. I said, it's not them. They're complying with what the IRS has finally put out as what you have to do as a standard, you know? So it's just, it's interesting to see, right? People try to fight it, but you just got to make it happen, man. You just got to do what you got to do.
Of course, they'll fight it because, oh, that'll never happen to us.
Until it happens.
Until that lawsuit comes up because that ex-employee decided to say, hey, you didn't pay me, so I'm going to make sure that you get cited.
Yeah, what do they say? There's always someone in office that knows where all the bodies are buried.
Or all the USB drives with the company information have been stored.
Yeah.
That's the next battle I got.
A great world we live in. That's the next podcast?
No, that's the next battle I got. I'll talk about that because another medical office wants to say that they're HIPAA compliant, but yet USB drives disappearing all over the place.
Actually, I do want to throw something out there so you know, and I don't know if you've had this experience or you've asked or talked to them. So you know, the medical people, I know because I date one, right? So when they go to... when they go to conferences and, you know, people talk about malpractice and all this ransomware, they're literally told to just pay it. They're literally told that your insurance company will take care of it. So they're not being taught prevention. They're actually being told that whenever it happens, that's fine. Pay it. Put a claim in with your insurance company and life goes on.
That's not going to last very much longer.
I would have. Well, no one's telling you how. By the way, you know, everybody forgets, if you get ransomware, let's just say you have every intention to go and pay it to get your data released, that doesn't mean you're going to get your decryption key. That server could get pulled offline. The feds could raid it, right? I mean, there's 100 different things that can happen. You have no guarantee that you paying that ransom is actually going to get you your decryption.
Well, no, that's never been a guarantee. But the problem is enough people are getting that back that, I mean, there was a story just... what was it, last week, where I can't remember where it was, but somebody paid $55,000 ransom to recover their files. So here's the thing. This is a medical center that paid $55,000. So of course that should trigger an investigation. So what are the fees and fines going to be based on that investigation? So in that sense, I can understand that paying $55,000 and having their insurance cover whatever fines may come after that is one thing. But, I mean, some of these places don't have insurance to cover that stuff.
Well, that's a good point. I actually did a few months back, I actually did a presentation, a webinar for a bunch of telemedicine docs. And pretty much saying how, you know, everybody's got a responsibility to, you know, keeping the stuff safe, right? Especially you guys that are not necessarily tied into one specific IT infrastructure, right? You know, they're kind of like a lot of telemedicine docs are kind of hopping around from place to place. And the most interesting thing is I actually pulled up, and I'm looking for it actually as we speak, I pulled up all the fines that HIPAA had actually, well, not HIPAA, I forgot what it was. I'm going to look it up. The office had actually dished out for HIPAA violations and of the likes. And one of them was like the biggest fine to date. But it was, I mean, it ranged between a lot of things, and it was just interesting to see, even from my side of doing the research, you know, what are the fees for not doing what you're supposed to be doing?
I'll have to talk to, I think a couple of months ago, is it 2 months? I think it was about 2 months ago, I had on David Sims, who runs the website HIPAA for MSPs. And his site actually keeps a journal of every breach announcement that comes out where somebody's been investigated or somebody's gotten fined. And I don't remember what the one that he brought up was, but there was one that just was something like $2 million or whatever it is.
Yeah, here it is. I'll tell you right here. Yep. I remember because I actually just pulled up my thing. Well, there was more than that, so you know. So the one you're talking about, there's one that was $2.1 million that happened in 2016. And what happened in that situation was PHI, obviously that data, private data, was made available through search engines. Literally.
Wow.
That was by a health system. Another health system had a $5.5 million fine in that same year. And they had a theft of desktop computers, loss of a laptop, and improper access of data at a business associate. And I think that $5 million one was probably one of the highest fines to date. And then, it ranged everything from a $400,000 fine, which one hospital had for the loss of two unencrypted backup tapes, all the way up to malware infection, unprotected network drives and, actual thefts. A hospital got a $2.2 million fine for filming of patients by a TV crew. Imagine that one.
Nice.
So there's all kinds out there.
Yeah. The best one that I've had to, I don't know what the outcome was, but one of my customers, an employee, had a medical procedure done where pictures of her were left in a unprotected folder on the server, where a doctor who left the practice put her pictures on his website.
Oh, is this he did the procedure?
No, he did not even do the procedure. He just took pictures of patients from the old company, took them to his new company, and threw them on his website as if they were his.
As if he did them. Yeah, as if he did them. So, like plastic surgery or something like that?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
One of those things?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that sounds like a violation, too. Well, he needed content, right?
Yeah, he needed something. Hey, got to start somewhere, right? Sounds like Russell Westbrook. Sounds like a HIPAA violation, right? I didn't even read that story. Did you read that?
No.
I've been so out of it. But I'll tell you this.
I mean, one of the most interesting things to me is you just have to understand that just because you haven't been caught or just because you've been fined doesn't mean it'll always be that way. And there's that phrase that says, the appearance of, when you do the wrong thing long enough, it has the appearance of being right. And that's a lot of the mentality that I think that we as technicians or as MSPs or however, trusted advisor, whatever phrase you want to use for us today, that's the uphill battle. And the question is, do you want to have that fight with a client or a prospect? Or do you want to say, you know what? You don't understand the value that we're bringing. You don't really understand what I'm doing for you. And you don't see it as a benefit. So I'm going to just get up and go somewhere else or deal with someone else. I mean, what do you think? Do you like having the confrontation or the discussion or, trying to get someone to understand it? Or do you look at it as you either get it or you don't?
I like to deal with customers that get it and rather not deal with the customers that don't. So I do use that philosophy. You either get why you use me or you don't. And if you don't, then maybe it's time you look for somebody else. So I deal with that. And I deal with the philosophy of you may want to risk your business by not doing things the right way. I'm not going to risk my business by not doing things the wrong way. And that's where, I'm trying to relay this whole HIPAA compliance and being a business associate. Even though the onus ends with the covered entity, the rules have now made it to where they don't end with the covered entity. They now extend out to us. Anybody that has touched their data is now liable. That means me. Uh-huh. So you might want to go and, take your chances. I'm not.
Correct. Actually, I'm going to tie this to the hardware conversation, right? About why do you buy hardware? And one of the things that I actually use in that hardware conversation is I'm not touching, by the way, you have a different mentality than me, which is you were saying earlier how if that client went to go buy hardware somewhere else, you would double your install, right? Because of your work. Now, I got a completely different philosophy. If you go buy hardware somewhere else, I ain't touching it. I'm not installing it. I'm not supporting it. I want nothing to do with
it. You're such a meanie.
Yeah, well, I am.
And you're leaving money on the table, some would say.
Well, but I'm going to tell you something. I used something that was very important. Now, I personally haven't had this experience, but I don't plan on it, right? You can, what happens if you bought an HP computer that fell off of a truck? Then I go and I call HP to get support on this because I need a replacement part. And HP looks at me and says, Stan, you're a partner. Yeah, I'm a partner. Where did you get this machine? Oh, you know, it's a client machine. I'm just calling. I don't want to have an issue with my standing with any of the companies that I work with
right.
because of something you did. So I tell people that all the time. Your headache is not going to become my headache. And I'm not touching something because I know I buy right from distribution. It comes to me. I do what needs to be done. We register your products, right? Get our full warranties and everything like that. So I don't know where this came from. I wonder how is it cheaper, right? I mean, sometimes some of the stuff is cheaper than your cost. And I'm like, I'm a partner, right? Come on now. How are you getting something like this cheaper than my cost? I know what the deal registrations are and things of that nature. My thing is I'm not touching anything in terms of new equipment that needs to be put in that I didn't buy for you. And it's just that simple.
So here's the question now. Yes, we do differ on that a little bit because I'll at least install it. But if there's a problem, you've got to go back to where you bought it from. So I do persuade them as much as possible to buy from me. So here's what I've actually done. And the question I was going to ask you is based on this. So I will sell my customers their stuff, their servers, their desktops, and I will sell them with the extended warranty. So with the HP Care Pack for the servers, for instance, It comes with a 5-year, 24/7, 4-hour response warranty. Now, I will honor and take care of that for you for the first 90 days. But a year later, depending on the severity of the issue, I will make the customers make that call to the 800 number and take advantage of their warranty. Because at that point, if the issue is HP, HP is the company that is providing that warranty service, not me. So, you know, I will, you know, the reason I, you know, wanted to say that is that, you know, a lot of techs will be like, well, if you buy it from me, I will always take care of it and I will, you know, but not everybody can do that.
Oh, yeah, no. Let's back up here. No. There is a big difference between what I call hardware warranty and labor. So, for example, and, you know, you mentioned, now, me telling you to call HP, there's a problem. Number one, most of my clients have us because they don't want to deal with any of that stuff, right? So, first of all, I got to diagnose the issue, okay? Okay, boom. Motherboard problem with your laptop, whatever it is. So I got no problem calling HP on your behalf, getting the box or if it's one of those next day on site services, right? Getting somebody out there next day. So, you know, by the way, right? You know, you're an HP partner. We got that special phone number that we can call and bypass all of the crap that happens, right? Partner support. Hey, this is my problem. This is what I need. All right. Where does it go? Nope. We'll be there tomorrow. So we actually handle all that. And clients like it because they don't want to be stuck on the phone, right? You know, they want to be stuck on the phone. Now, does that happen at a charge? Yes, right? The clock starts. Now, interestingly enough, I'm an HP shop, and I know people sell plenty of other stuff, but we used to sell Dell. We don't for various reasons. But one of the things I used to tell people, like, why you sell HP is when I pick up the phone, I can be on and off that phone in 10 minutes getting you a part instead of being on a hold for 40 minutes, which you're paying me for. So would you rather me do it quickly, or you rather me be on the phone all day with some person telling me, did you try this? Did you try that? Did you take this out? Right? It's like when Verizon had the old man, you know, outside his house with a butt, you know, test the phone line. Yeah. No. We don't have time for that. Right? This is the problem. This is what we need. So, you know, for the most part, we are handling even the support calls with the manufacturers, but clients don't care because that's part of what they pay us.
Okay. So I'll do that with servers. I don't do it with desktops.
Yeah, no, we do it across the board. Now I'm going to tell you this: if it's a Because most of the time, a diagnosis has to happen, right? We have to try to figure out what's wrong. And I think that goes back to what we talked about earlier, is do we take care of it? Yes. Is there a fee for it? Yeah, right? You know what I mean? There's a fee for it. Yes, right? Which is the time it takes. So once again, you don't go to a doctor and get a consultation, right? You don't talk to a lawyer. Actually, most lawyers, you know, you might get free half an hour. After that, the clock starts, right? I mean, there's just, you pay for that diagnosis. So we do that. Now, the other thing too is we also make sure that, you know, you don't send your laptop or your computer out and it comes back completely white, right? Like, you know.
What, doesn't that happen to every computer and laptop? I mean.
No. No, we said, actually, we send that stuff out. If we have to send something out, I actually take the drive out, right? Literally take the drive out, send it to them without the drive.
Yeah, I've had to tell customers ahead of time, look, don't let them touch it until we back that up, if they're not on a regular backup, because it's quite surprising how many techs, even if they're not Dell or HP, would just simply, they'll come in, put in a new drive, here's your OS disk, thank you very much, bye-bye.
Oh yeah, well, I tell people all the time, right? If that's the circumstance, let's just pretend, if that's what I'm going to do, you don't need me. See, and it goes back to the conversation we were having earlier about value, right? I have to provide value. That's what I do. I have to make you feel, which is like, wow, man, I spent money on this person and it was well worth it because they took care of everything. Actually, it's funny you say that because right here on my desk, here's a hard drive from a client had a hard drive fail in one of the HP computers put in, right? Sitting in this box, Marvin, right here, right? And we got the replacement hard drive. We went out, we put it in for them, right? We did all the setup, right? Put everything back how she likes it. But I told her, let me take that hard drive because I'm going to see if I can pull any of your data. I don't think there's anything on there that she actually needs because we actually have all her stuff cloud syncing. But just in case, we took that hard drive at no additional cost, right? I'm going to go look, see if there's anything there, pull it off, and then she could just download.
I always do that. I will always take, even if it's a bad drive. Now, luckily, most of the time, if you catch the drive early enough,
correct,
I just do a clone. I don't know. Hey, did you see my clone picture on how fast I cloned drives yesterday?
Oh, no, no. I got to look at that.
5 minutes, 55 seconds.
That's it? Why did it take you so long?
Because I wasn't
SSDs or no?
I wasn't using Insight. Yeah, it was a 1 terabyte Seagate SATA, the 2 Samsung Evo 850 SSDs.
Yeah, man, those SSDs are the truth, man. Actually, I got my Samsung SSD. I pulled out of my old laptop. Actually, I got a new laptop with a PCI slot. You know, this thing. By the way, that's an interesting thing, right? How do you feel? We're at the point with laptops, right? You know, your Surfaces and your things like that. I mean, I actually have this is an HP EliteBook X360, which is essentially, you know, HP's Surface. How do you feel that we're at that stage, you know, like almost in the Mac world where you have to buy it how you want it, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's no longer I'll put a new drive in there later or we'll just upgrade RAM. It's like, you literally have to get this thing how you want it because guess what? You can't do anything to it after you buy.
Well, it's not even that alone. It's in 1 year, you're not going to be able to do anything because the next model is going to be out and you can't find stuff to do to your existing model. Now, granted, I still prefer the old style notebooks so that we do have the option of, you know, upgrading RAM or replacing the hard drive. But yeah, when you're dealing with the Surface and the hybrid tablets, you might as well buy what you can afford and max the puppy out. Because, you know, if you use that thing for 2-3 years, there are no options, like you said. The option is get a new one.
Yeah, correct. Oh, by the way, always put on the accidental damage protection. You know, just in case, right? You can't change the battery out. There's so many of these components you can't change out on your own.
Right.
I don't care, right? You got to have that. And that's exactly what I did. I mean, based on what you just said, I literally maxed out the unit, everything in here, got the biggest hard drive, the most memory I can get, the fastest processor, because I just know there's nothing you can do after.
So my one of my customers, I just had to go and upgrade workstations at their office to Windows 10 so that they could, from their house, this is crazy. So I just put in two big stinking all-in-ones at their house. It's a partner in a law firm, and his wife is the controller in the law firm. They want to work from home, and they have two monitors at the office. They want two monitors at the house as well. Even though they got 23-inch all-in-ones at the house, I had to get them a 23-inch monitor to put off to the side. So I just ordered, I did the wife's computer a couple months ago, and so now we're getting around to doing the husband's computer. So when I ordered his all-in-one, this was his SSD drive.
That's right. That's right,
and
man.
It took me like 5 minutes to get the cover off so I can get in here, and I had to take out special screws to get this. And I know this is an audio podcast, so sorry, people, you can't see what I'm holding up, but basically it's one of those M2 SSD cards that this one's 256 gig, and that was one of the SSD drives that I was putting in. I upgraded it to a 1 gig SSD.
PCI, man, much faster. So even now when we're fast, you know, we're we were talking about that project that you gave up, right? Which was, do we go full SSD on the drives, right? Or do you just go traditional, SCSI? So I think the prices are coming down, right? Everybody is,
it's funny every deal that I'm doing now when it comes to upgrading or replacing computers, it's almost to the point where I tell the customer, look, if you don't want to go through the hassle of getting a new computer and us transferring all the data and do, you know what? RAM and an SSD drive will make it seem like a new computer. So, you know, in that respect, you know, the cost of a drive now for most of my customers, they're still at the 500 gig drive. So the drive's, you know, $1.50 to $1.85, depending on whether it's a, you know, economy Western Digital SSD or the Mac Daddy Samsung SSD. And then I charge them, you know, whatever it costs for me to do a 15-minute drive copy.
One of these bad boys right here, right?
Yep, that's it. 850
Samsung
Evo.
850 Evo, man.
Yeah. And how nice is it now that we can actually buy them from distribution?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I did the whole thing, right? Became a Samsung partner. By the way, just to throw it out there, because I know people have mentioned it, if you actually become a Samsung partner to get that stuff through distribution, there is one caveat. You can never buy it from like Amazon or anything. Let's just say Amazon is cheaper, right? The distribution. You can't buy it from them because it supposedly voids your partnership status or something. So there's some kind of weird stuff to look out for, just to not get hemmed up. But, you know, manufacturers are always coming up with something, which leads me to something. And you mentioned earlier in terms of us being a commodity. Well, hardware sales, right?
Hardware, yes.
And reality is.
But here's the thing. We ourselves are becoming a commodity because there's always somebody out there willing to undercut our price. And for people that are tire kickers and looking only for price, they just think all techs are the same, you know. Hey, all you're going to do is stick a USB drive in my computer and run some program, right? So, you know, why can't I pay somebody $50 an hour to do that? Why do I have to pay you $150 to do that?
Listen, I think the best example that you could ever give to somebody is to relate it to their industry. And I remember I told a lawyer this. I said, how would you feel if you wrote a brief, someone else got that brief, they threw three words in it, and then presented it to them? Right?
Did I tell you the example I gave to the customer I fired?
No, go ahead.
So here's what it came down to. When they were asking me to give them my quote with all the line item parts and stuff so they could take it to somebody else. And I said, okay, so you're asking me to do all the work to design it, because I don't know if you remember, but it was multiple servers, the SAN drive, you know, and all that stuff, you know, SSD versus, and I said, so you're asking me to just give it to you so you can take it somewhere else so they can make money on it. And he goes, well, yeah, hardware's hardware, right? Okay. I said, so here's the deal. So you spend a whole year working on a case. You do all the affidavits. You do all the depositions. You do all the discovery. you put everything together in your trial briefcase and get all that. The day of the trial, I'm sorry, you go through the trial and you get everything ready to closing arguments. Your client turns to you and says, hey, can you give your closing argument to this attorney, another firm? He's going to do your closing argument. He's going to win it. They're going to get all the money. And he's like, no freaking way. And I said, that's what you're asking me to do.
Oh, you mean that's not okay?
And that's when he finally got it. He's like, oh, was that, yeah, that what you think we're doing to you? I said, no, that's what you are doing to me.
Yeah, he got it, but he didn't get it. You know what I mean? Right. He got it, but he didn't get it.
So that's, I was not happy. And that was kind of around the time where I was like, you know what? Then I think it's time for us to go. And he literally was like, you know, I thought we were going to retire together.
Well, we can still retire at the same time. We're just not leaving the same company.
Right. You know what I mean? It was funny.
We won't be walking out of the same door, you know?
We won't have matching boxes walking in the door. Oh, man. All right. So, wow. Customer etiquette.
It's interesting. And I also think that the, the industries that you deal with have a lot to do with it. Look, lawyers are trained to argue both sides of the point, right? So, you know, in a way, is it surprising? No, because a lot of times this is what these people do. I mean, this is literally what these people do for a living, and they're trained to do it, and they enjoy it. But I also think that you have to be well equipped to be able to propose your side. And I do think that there is something about, you know, in a way, the smell test, right? You know, I remember one lawyer that I grabbed on, actually one of my first firms that I kind of got under contract, is, you know, I actually knew their old IT guy. And he's like, Stan, I couldn't sell these guys a $500 firewall. Meanwhile, I sold them a $20,000 server, right? So, and then a managed service contract. So there was something about it where either A, they felt more comfortable or believed in my ability versus him, or maybe I just caught them on a good day, right? I mean, who knows? But I do think that there is some of that, and people don't want to feel like they're being had, especially when they see or deal with people who are in that vulnerable position. And really, nobody wants to feel vulnerable, right? So hopefully you build that trust level with your clients to where you can, you know, be able to fully explain yourself and, you know, and get them to understand what you're...
That is true. That is true. All right, my friend. Well, we're at the 90-minute mark. So let's take a break and end this show here, and I'll invite you back to maybe we'll do a part two to customer etiquette. I think I'm going to have a series on customer etiquette and just talk about the stories and do all that. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to wrap this up, and I will... Stan, do you mind if I put a link to your website on there so some of my listeners can see who you are? And anybody that's up in the New York, New Jersey area might want to give you a shout out. I should also mention that Stan is also a member of ASCII. That is a group that I'm a part of. And so some of the stories that we share are shared by the ASCII members. And hey, we have a meeting coming up here next month down here in Florida. Are you flying down?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm actually going to the two I'm going to are the one in Jersey and the one up in Toronto. Oh. So I try to limit myself to two this year, but I probably will also be at TanelCon.
Where is that this year?
I have no idea. I'm on one of the Future Leaders Council. So
okay.
I'm probably definitely gonna have to be that. So that's pretty much it.
I haven't finalized my conference schedule for 2018 yet. I just did the Datto Roadshow a couple of weeks ago here in Fort Lauderdale. The ASCII one that's out in Weston, I'll be attending that. I've got conferences coming up later this year in Chicago. Hint, hint, listeners, I will be making those announcements here pretty soon on those conferences in the Chicago area, which means I probably will not be doing ChannelCon. I will not be at the ABA tech show.
I'll be at ABA.
Are you presenting again?
Yeah, I have two sessions. The first one is business continuity, do it yourself or hire out. And the second one is Office 365, essentially moving your firm from an in-house exchange to Office 365. Both sessions are part of the advanced IT track. So we're going to get in depth.
Oh, I need to find a way to get up there then.
Yeah. It's going to be, the assumption is that, of course, whoever we're dealing with understands tech, you know, it might be the people even implementing the solutions.
All right. So I'll definitely put a link there so that people can get in touch with you if you guys are going to be around any of those conferences and want to see Stanley in action. That would be great. And again, if anybody's in the area, wants to just do a shout out, meet up, look for somebody to partner with on some tech support or projects, that would be great as well. So Stanley, thank you very much for coming on.
And, Mark, I appreciate you having me. Thank you very much. It was a great time here.
All right. And I know we'll be talking soon. So ladies and gentlemen, that will end this episode of PodNuts Pro. I want to thank you for subscribing. Subscribing, downloading, and listening. Be sure to head over to podnuts.com, listen to some of the other great shows over there. Also visit our patrons and visit our sponsors on the podnuts.com site and keep this content coming to you free of charge. You can reach me at marvin@podnuts.com. Send me your show suggestions. Send me any comments, any follow-ups, any questions, text tips, anything you want to send. I will be doing a follow-up show here in the next couple of weeks where I will go back and visit some of the emails that I've gotten over the last few weeks. I've got some great stories and some great follow-ups to do. You can also follow us on the Twitter at PodNutsPro. And I'm out of breath, so I'm going to end off the show. And for all of those out there in PodNuts land, have a good night. And until next time, holla.